everyone, and welcome once again. I am here with Bazillion Thought, who had an interesting video a couple of days ago when I talked to him about, or yesterday, whenever it was, about media literacy, the take seller market, and many other things. I gave a long and hard thought to my media image, Bazillion, and that's why I just bought a tweed jacket, exactly the same as the one I would have worn 10 years ago. Today we're going to be talking about what you're calling the TQ and censorship. We can unpack exactly what all this means. For the purposes of the conversation, remember, Troon is the thing that is preferred by our algo overlords. Before we get going, where can people find you, Bazillion Thought?
So you can follow me on Twitter at Bazillion Thought, and then we also have a YouTube show, the Betty and Basil Show, and you can find that on YouTube.
And I'll just remind people, pick up courses at the Academic Agency. Trivium is the bestseller there, Foundations of Shakespeare. Many other great courses available. Okay, so the TQ and dual litmus tests and censorship. Take it away, Basil.
So for, like we talked about last time we spoke, was that there are certain kind of guardrails for me that really that guide my navigation through the market, my engagement with politics, etc. One of them is mass migration and mass deportations. But really what brought me here, what got me here in the first place, was this kind of anti-censorship position. And forgive me, because a lot of the references I'll talk to with regards to law will be in the American context, but the same kind of trajectory applies across the Anglosphere. And what was important for me when I came on in around 2020, around COVID, was to hand to the take sellers that I was listening to, people like Red Scare, people like Amy Therese, etc., was to kind of flesh out their analysis so they could understand that the mechanism by which we are censored online and in the workplace is the Civil Rights Act here in America. The equivalent in the UK would be like human rights law, et cetera. That Civil Rights Act, Title VI, Title VII, Title IX, is the legal mechanism by which we in America are censored online and in the workplace. Because online terms of service and workplace HR departments, human resources departments, have to preempt litigation by basically incorporating the Civil Rights Act into their terms of service and into their corporate policies, such that the things that would get you fired or disciplined are those things which would open them up to litigation under the Civil Rights Act. And I take the Ann Coulter position on the Civil Rights Act to say, you know, whether it was legitimate at the time when it was passed, it was about the American descendants of slaves and redressing the historical, you know, impacts of slavery. But what we saw in subsequent generations was the expansion of that to include all racial minorities, then women, then homosexuals, then cross-dressers, right? So when I say things on the timeline, you may see me say things like black with a trademark symbol, black TM, or gay TM, or woman TM. I'm not necessarily referring to people of sub-Saharan African ancestry, or females, or sodomites, etc., or whatever. I'm referring to people who already exist as those things, but then choose to adopt for themselves that kind of politicized identity in order to weaponize it in the workplace and online through the implicit threat of utilizing this censorship regime. So the reason why the TQ comes up is because that is the latest in time expansion of this legal framework, right? So after, in the United States, Obergefell, which made gay marriage legal in all 50 states, there was a whole NGO industrial complex, to say, that lost its raison d'etre overnight. And this is true with every issue across the board. It's this kind of alliance between the academy and the NGO nonprofit sector, which employs these professional managerial class people to enact that type of the things that are studied in the academy. But after Obergefell, all of these, the Human Rights Campaign, GLAAD, the Trevor Project, all of these like LGBT organizations lost their raison d'etre and immediately switched over to the plans issue, right? And what this does is it expands the censorship regime. It erodes free association because, like we said, you're now able to be disciplined and fired at work or be platformed online for saying something as innocuous as men can't be women or men can't give birth. And really, it becomes so pernicious because if you can be censored or be platformed for something like that, then all of these other much more contentious issues about war and peace, about the vaccine, about anything else, become moot because you can't even have, because really all of these things go together, right? All of, if you're more likely to be the type of person who is rejecting immigration or is rejecting the vaccine, you're most likely to be the type of person who feels comfortable to say that men can't be women. But if you can be censored for something saying that men can't give birth, well, you're never going to get to the conversations of the war in Ukraine or the vaccine or whatever the case may be. So That in a nutshell is why the trans question is important. And to already preempt the kind of knee-jerk response to this is to say, it's not about individuals who cross-dress. I am a cosmopolitan, hedonist, whatever, okay? I don't care how people dress, what they call themselves, etc. It's about the utilization of the legal structure that is used to censor us, right? So, for example, I have a friend who, you know, she's trans, okay? But she doesn't flip out when I say, listen, buddy, love you, kiki, cuckoo, kaka, all the little gay terminology, but your license should still say male. Because if it says female, then what you're doing is you are reifying the legal structure which censors me online in the workplace. Now, what I've come to learn in this transition from the dissident left to the kind of dissident right over these past couple of years is that liberals, left and right, use two different issues to censor the discourse. The left liberals use the trans question, right? So that's why you have people like Anna Kasparian and Glenn Greenwald, etc., who will have a critique of Israel, but will be the first people to attack you if you threaten the sanctity of their gay TM identity or trans TM rights, right? Whereas on the right, you're allowed to be have a very full-throated critique of trans, but they will whip you back into line over Israel. That's why you have people like Nancy Mace and Billboard Chris and Libs of TikTok. So what it ends up being is that there's this kind of dual-pronged censorship approach, right, where there's the TQ and then the Israel question on the thing. So as we kind of enter what I kind of see as a redo of populism, almost, it feels like. It almost feels like almost quasi-2015-era populism, with, you know, the right populace being in more control this time than the left populace. My contention is that we need to be dual-wielding this kind of litmus test. So for someone coming from the traditional left, like an Anna Kasparian or a Glenn Greenwald or a Ryan Grimm, you say, oh, sure, you love what we're saying about Israel? Really quick, can a man become a woman? Do we have gender identities? Should that be recognized in the law? See if they can clear that, because they can clear the Israel one very easily. And then coming from the right, you can say, oh, great, yeah, of course, we don't want men in women's locker rooms and women's prisons and whatever. Really, really quick, is Barry Weiss an Israeli spy? Is there a fifth column going on here? What, et cetera, et cetera. So that way, you kind of have a firewall built on both ends that is foundationally built on anti-censorship.
You're thinking like Comrade Stalin here, the left deviation and the right deviation, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've often thought about this as well. While we're on this, though, I mean, I've been, how can I put this? Years ago, I gave this talk where I broke down, it was called The Octopus, where I broke down a lot of the stuff you talked about, the NGOs, the flow of money through the system, how lots of the things we see are top down. I have a book here called The Transgender Industrial Complex, which it literally gives you all the receipts on this.
Yep.
Forget it's here. It's really hard to get hold of now, but this book here, yes, basically gives every single receipt you can imagine, okay, on this question. But as time went on, I started to notice something, okay? J.K. Rowling, there's a comedian here who got into a lot of trouble over the trans issue called Graham Linehan, okay?
Yes.
Jordan Peterson made his name on the trans question. Daily Wire loved to talk about the trans question. Matt Walsh, all of these different people build up their based points, okay? They build up their heat through attacking the trans issue. And it didn't take me long to figure out, hold on a second, I draw a list of all the people who were who've made their name on the trend issue, pretty much to a man and woman, they're hardcore Zionists. Okay,
exactly.
Which made me think, look, this whole woke anti-woke thing, is this just another layer of containment and slop around the whole thing, where you're allowed to? I mean, my buddy Scrump calls it the based ball pit. You're allowed to play almost like children with action figures over this, right? But you step outside of that and they become as shrieking and as woke, if you want, over the Israel. So the question I've got is, how comes this trans thing came up as an issue, patently absurd to all right normal people, okay, has been stable for thousands of years. Then it's the first, like, I had this whole thesis about the woke being put away, right? The woke, but, and I think we've been watching it since 2020, slowly but surely, the woke being put away. It massively got accelerated after 10/7, especially Trump coming back in and so on, the tech switching sides. Like, it became the done thing now to be anti-woke. But I always wonder, was a lot of capital built up around the trans thing with the whole intention that eventually this is the bit that's too far? Because under the banner of trans, a lot of groups were then accepted into the broad right coalition. The TERFs, as one example.
Homocons.
Right, homocons. I mean, all these people I just listed, they're right. J.K. Rowling is literally just a shit-lived feminist.
Right.
Who doesn't like the trans thing. Yet she gets cheered on. And then on a different day, it's like, oh, you know,
she's hectoring you for misogyny and sexism.
Yes. And then on a different day again, she's cheerleading Israel. You see what I mean?
Yes.
And so this is why I have been resistant to kind of, I mean, one, it's kind of done a lot, the trans thing, but also I see, like, it's like the most allowable bit, right? It's the most allowable bit in the system. Whereas, I don't know, let's say we got into World War II revisionism. That is not allowed. That's the Andre the Giant gif, you know. So break this down for me.
See, I see what you're saying, right? But I see it differently in the sense that I agree 100% in your analysis of, like, the J.K. Rowling's, the Rad Femmes, the TERFs, et cetera, et cetera. I completely see that. But that kind of containment bubble that's on it is so thin. And my instinct is to say it's so easy to pierce and so easy to pop and make the whole thing collapse on itself. And it gets to, and all the worms and the grubs start to rise once you do it, that it's actually very important to have, once you understand this, to poke it so that it all falls apart. So, for example, when we're talking about someone like, let's take Matt Walsh in the sense of putting the woke away and whatever. I don't see it as putting the woke away. I see it in Stalinist terms, as a kind of Thermidorian revolution, or Thermidorian retraction, right? It's a Thermidorian something. I forget what it is. A retreat, reaction, whatever. Whereas the trans thing goes too far. So what you do is you critique the excess in order to reify the premise, right? So they went too far by saying, we're going to trans your kids and we're going to take away children from their parents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So people fight about that. Meanwhile, the premise that's never touched is the law going to recognize gender identity expression? See, this is what Matt Walsh and the other guy from the Daily Wire, Michael Knowles love to do. They are out here declaring victory over the trans question because what? Because the Olympics changed their rules? Because women's sports? No one gives a fuck about, sorry, no one gives a crap about women's sports. It's about whether the law recognizes gender identity expression, and that has never changed. In fact, the left is very happy to give up excesses like transitioning children or whatever, because what they care about is that censorship aspect, and that censorship aspect is predicated on whether gender identity expression is recognized in the law. So when it comes to people like J.K. Rowling and Rad Femmes, RadFems are not your friend. The reason why RadFems and even HomoCons hate the trans question is because they have been usurped as the tip of the spear of the censorship regime, as the top of the totem pole. Marbeck from the Good Old Boys has a great tweet where he says, RadFems want to reject the gender studies departments of 2025 for the gender studies departments of 2015, where they were the tip of the spear, where they were the trans person. Like Nancy Mace, for example, I always say, was the trans person of her time. She weaponized the Civil Rights Act in order to invade a man's only space of Citadel, the university she went to. And that's what it is, where it's like all of these things end up being just vehicles for the expansion of censorship. It's just that we're kind of blessed in this way, where the vehicle for which it's being expanded upon now is so absurd on its face that we should be rejecting it root and stem. It kind of unravels the whole thing because it says, okay, well, if we're expanding civil rights for cross-dressers, what is the ideological, philosophical basis for that? And it starts to attack then, why do we have civil rights for sodomites? Right? Because sodomites, like women, analogize themselves to black people to say that, oh, well, the way I have sex is not a moral failing. It's not me being a depraved pervert. It's actually I was born this way just like a black person or just like a woman, right? Which is a completely modern concept. I mean, go read Foucault from the right. And you don't have to, there's nothing there. Yeah. So there's a lot there, but it's and a lot of people want to kind of throw their hands up and say, I don't really want to touch this. I don't know enough about, trust me, you know enough to know that a man can't be a woman, despite how open and cosmopolitan we may be and have, you know, that's a completely separate interpersonal thing. But we're talking about the law as a mechanism for censorship.
One question I've got, one thing that I think has been in the process of happening, and I'm actually wondering about your take on things from the ground there. You know, there's a book by Bertrand de Juvenel called On Power, where he develops this idea of the high-low middle mechanism, okay? And if you have a look at the woke coalition, all of the minority groups, including, you know, the black community, the LGBTQ plus community, blah, 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 were classic client groups, okay? Enlisted by power, capital B, whether it was the city, whether it was the government, capital P power, enlisted a client group, okay? But the analogy I always like to make is to Henry VIII, okay? Henry VIII wanted to smash the Catholic Church, okay? In order to do that, he needed to elevate new bureaucrats. He pulled people up, elevated them as the king, Thomas Cromwell, whoever. But then, once they started becoming powerful, they risked becoming a rival castle themselves. And of course, Henry VIII being Henry VIII, well, he chopped their heads off. He had to sideline them. He had to get rid of them. And what I think happened is that woke was a client group, had a purpose. But because these people were actually getting into positions of power, they became the newly elevated bureaucrats. And I mean, what I think has happened over the past 3-4 years is that they've had their wings clipped and they've been dropped. They've been dropped as power, capital P power. I'm talking like the Larry Finks, the Larry Ellisons, the billionaire class have dropped that group, partly over the Palestine issue, right? Because the left became all about that, but partly also because they started to be an actual rival castle, an actual pain. And so I guess my question is, one, to what extent has that actually happened, or do they still wield significant power? And two, if they have actually been dropped, if they're out of power now, do they actually still have the censorship? Do they still have that, or you're actually beating up a villain after he's already been defeated? So
I think that it's kind of in they've been dropped in the soft power aspect, right? In the cultural zeitgeist, yes, I totally agree. However, it's the same thing that I was talking about with Matt Walsh and Andrew Knowles, where nothing has changed about the legal structure. If I went to my workplace tomorrow in a dress and they fired me, I could sue them. I could extract value from that that value chain still works. Those pipes are still, you know, functioning. Whether or not Because the thing is, it's the same thing with during the 90s and the early 2000s when they were trying, the expansion of the Civil Rights Act was on the basis of sexual orientations, right? Every day on Jerry Springer and Ricky Lake and Sally Jesse Raphael, it was, where's the gay gene? Is there a gay gene? What about the gay gene? Oprah was always talking about the gay gene. The second it became solidified in law, they dropped that shit like a hot potato. They didn't care. Because that was all just a pretext, a hamster wheel to keep kind of intellectual cosmopolitan liberals to be like, oh, let's think about this, until the mechanism, the legal mechanism was taken care of. And one quick point that I really want to make on this is because, you know, so much of this is pushed by the little tech elite, right? And what we're seeing is what you might think of as putting the woke away, I see as them being embarrassed by this kind of intermediary position that we're currently in. They want so desperately to get past this kind of cringe gender goblin stage so they can get to the transhumanist stage. That's what, there's a book called Transgender to Transhumanism written by Martine Rothblatt, which is a trans person herself. And it's like one of these, I think is a billionaire, if I'm not mistaken. But that's basically what this transgender thing is about. It's about transhumanism. They want us to, they want to see in the population for a couple generations the idea that this kind of extreme Cartesian dualism where you are, you know, your breasts are not your body, your genitals are not your body, your body is not you. You are this immaterial essence inside. And Peter Thiel, in the interview where he talked about the Antichrist, I believe it was with Doubt That, he even says himself, he's like, I'm just unsatisfied with transgender or transsexualism because it's so limited, it's so low to talk about turning your penis into a vagina. We want to expand beyond, you know, this whole live forever, upload yourself to the cloud. And the way I see it is that eventually what they want to do is, like, if you think about, you know, if you read the 18th Lumiere by Marx and we talk about Bonapartism and we think of the early 20th century of Europe as a type of Bonapartist coalition in which there's, like, you know, excess eaters, there's excess labor, and how you cull that is through war and extermination. Here, what we see, this kind of new Bonapartist coalition, is that you get rid of the excess eaters by, you're sterile, you don't have kids, and you know what? Maybe you'll upload yourself to the cloud, and your body will plop to the ground, and an AI simulacrum of you will exist in a digital space, and your family won't mourn your death because they won't have conceptualized you as dying. They'll see you shucking and jiving there in the tech space. Your body plops to the ground, and you get to the same point where it's, we've kind of gotten rid of a lot of the useless eaters. So, and that's the point about the trans thing, is one is a part of censorship, but the reason why it's pushed by tech defense, pharma finance, is also because of this transhumanist aspect.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Whenever transhumanism is discussed, my mind always goes back to Spengler. I don't know if you've read Spengler, but he's got this idea of Faustian man, right? That the animating spirit of Europeans, of some people might call it Christendom, but the civilization that was born out of the ashes of Rome, or at some point when it became like 1000 AD, something like that, its animating spirit is that it doesn't have, is infinity, is the infinity symbol. There is no limit to what humans can do, landing on the moon, conquering the globe, making every single person on Earth bow to the Pope, whatever it is. It's this kind of like almost insane universalism that everybody must come under that remit, and also nothing can stop it. And whenever I've thought about the trans issue and also transhumanism and these figures like Thiel and Elon Musk has got quite a lot of it, I often think like this is the kind of expression of Faustianism. And I actually wonder if at some later date, if what you're saying is true, they will try to sell transhumanism to the right under the remit of this is the whitest thing you can do.
You can already see the seeds of it. You can already see the seeds of it. When we're talking about Brian Johnson and Never Die, his whole thing of Never Die. And, you know, are you familiar with a fellow by the name of Clavicula?
I've seen him on my timeline. He's a kind of freaky boy, right?
Yes, he's a young man who very much thrown himself into a kind of quasi-transhumanist thing of, like, manipulate your body and peptides and whatever to look smack, to look as good as possible. You know who we got a call from? Peter Thiel. And obviously the trite thing is to say, well, of course he wants to sleep with him and throw him off of a balcony. But really it's because what Clavicula represents is this kind of transhumanist ethos of peptides and biohacking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to look the best you can. And even to this day, I saw it last year where Peter Thiel was sponsoring a transhumanist type of Olympic event, right? Where it's like performance-enhancing drug-taking athletes would compete in Olympic-style events. And I think that's what, because for a lot of these people, for the past 20, 30 years in Silicon Valley, that this is what they've been shilling. This has been their snake oil that they've been selling to these kind of VCs who have too much money on their hands and want to live forever because they're scared of death and meeting their maker. They're constantly told, like, oh, living forever is just around the corner. These red light treatments and these peptides and all of these things are just around the corner. So what we're seeing, I fully believe that we're already seeing it on the right, which is exactly why, you know, I hate to say it, but there's so many, like, wherever you look, whether you look at Alex Jones or whether you look at the Dud Square Seed or whatever the case may be, there is always their trans person in residence, whether it's Blair White or whether it's Pariah the Doll or whatever the case may be, because in and of themselves, they are a personification of this, whatever you want to call this, transhumanist, this Faustian thing where it's like, I'm bending the world around me to my will of calling me this and that and the other thing. And I think that's the seedlings of what you're getting at.
Yeah. There's one, I don't think I've ever mentioned this anywhere, and I won't mention who this person was, but let's just say a prominent and famous online right dissident figure. Okay. I remember I went through this period of going hard at anime avatar lolly posters. Right. And in fact, there were some people some people still from years and years ago only know me from a video I did many years ago on the anime to trans pipeline, where I said, look, there's something weird here, because literally every single trans person is into anime. Mm-hmm. Right. It's something about these, something about watching these Japanese cartoons leading you to want to wear a skirt. Okay. And I also, many years ago, pointed out a few other things like sissy hypno and things like that. Yep. as a kind of weird pipeline, trying to answer the very real question of why is there an uptick of trans, and also in right-wing spaces, why are there so many trans, right? I mean, maybe it's all just autism, but I remember there was a period on Twitter of all of these little anime avatars who had the 18 crossed out lolly posters, they were called.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is weird. Right? Why are we doing this? Like, what, pedophilia now? Like, mm-hmm. What, weird cross-dressing, trans pedophilia? This is cool. And I remember I got an intervention. I got a DM from someone who I won't name, saying, like, lay off attacking those guys. They're cool. What? Lay off attacking the
people. But never forget, don't interact with Basil, because Basil's gay. Like, right. Let's be so fucking for real. You know what I'm saying? It's like, the lollicon is okay, but we're going to performatively hate Basil for being gay, but we love Scott Bessent and Peter Thiel. Okay, so the way I view it is that I view the lollicon in the same way that I view the esoteric H-Man posting, right? Mm-hmm. What it is, it kind of is this kind of hostage situation with the audience, where they encourage you as an audience member to, you know, do a Roman salute and say how much you love Cunny and how much you want to, you know, have sex with this child anime character. Because what it does, it incriminates you and it locks you into a hostage situation with them. They're fine. When they get quote-unquote doxxed, they go on to go speak at NatCon and whatever, because they're already patronized for their edgy posting. However, for the audience member, what you've done is you've made it so that if you ever get doxxed, you are an out and proud lollicon enjoyer and an H-Man enthusiast.
Mm, very, very good point. That hadn't occurred to me. Well, you can maybe guess who that person was. I won't say who it was, but
let me make an omelet. I gotta go get some eggs.
Well, it wasn't him. It wasn't that one.
Well, the same difference. They're all the same to
Jason,
me.
Jason. Anyway, Basil, it's been fascinating as ever. I mean, I think pretty much everybody watching this is, you know, woke on the TQ, if you want to put it that way, or they understand these things. It's kind of, but it is an interesting thing to keep the dual litmus test. And in fact, next time we're going to talk about these attempts at instituting new litmus tests and new ways of slicing and dicing. But where can people find you?
So yeah, you can find me on X at Bazillion Thought. And then again, the Basil and Benny Show on YouTube. Check it out.
I'll just remind people, buy courses at the Academic Agency. Trivium, the bestseller there. Many other courses are available. Buy it now. Most importantly of all, get out.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the Academic Agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.